Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for Trek Talking 2. This is kind of our overflow show from our Thursday night show because we have so much Star Trek to talk about, so much new content that we really needed another show to squeeze everything in. Before I get started, I want to introduce you to my co-host. Of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and with me, we'll start off with Eric's not here. We'll start off with Paul. Paul is out in Portland. How are you doing tonight, Paul?
Doing okay, my friend. Doing okay. It's been, month number 8 of torrential rain out here in Portland. So we're kind of like, we need it, but we're done with it all at the same time. So it definitely makes it easier to justify more time inside watching science fiction, though. So we'll take it. We'll take it, my friend.
Well, or Trek talking, of course.
Exactly.
And we also have from the Portland area, David. How you doing tonight, David?
I'm doing good. It's actually sunny where I'm at. I don't know about Paul, but it's kind of downtown Portland, I guess, has a different attitude around the surrounding areas.
Wow. Well, it's beautiful up here in Vermont. I'll tell you that much. It's I wouldn't trade it for anything. So you guys may have noticed that I did not play our typical We Didn't Start the Series opening theme song that Eric was so kind to record for us. Instead, we got the Picard Season 2 opening theme song. And the reason for that is because we have a very, very special, very fun, and very exciting show planned for you guys tonight, actually. Before I get too far into that, let me tell you the phone number here is 646-668-2433, 646-668-2433, and you're going to put that into your speed dial and start calling, because if you watch Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 8, Mercy, then you would have noticed that there was a Vulcan on Earth. And yes, actually there was two, but one in particular that we're calling the Mind Meld Vulcan, because I couldn't find a name in the credits, so we're just going to call him the Mind Meld Vulcan. And he makes an appearance in this episode, and he's played by none other than Eduardo Roman. And I hope I said your name right. Is it Roman or Roman? I'm not sure. But he is with us live on the line, and he'd love to answer your questions. The phone lines are open to take your calls. 646-668-2433 is the number. And Eduardo, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Hi, Jim, Paul, and David. I got all your names right, right?
Absolutely.
Can you guys hear me okay? Is this good sound?
Really well.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be talking to you guys. Thank you.
It's very painless too. There's no video, so you can be lounging around in your pajamas, sipping on some wine. No one has to see you. It's just talking on the phone. It's a really easy thing. So basically, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, I think, but obviously, we're going to talk about Star Trek. So before we get too far, I just have to ask the obvious question is, were you a Star Trek fan before you got the role of the mind meld Vulcan?
Yes. I've been a Star Trek fan since I was a kid. As you guys can hear, I have an accent. I'm from Mexico. And in other interviews, I've been telling people that when growing up in the 80s, in Mexico, in a small town, we did get the original series. But what happened was that down there in my little hometown, we got the original series, but all scattered. Like the channel would only show on the weekends episodes, but not in the order. It was a mess. It was a complete mess. I would still watch them and try to figure out, you know, with my child and teenager, later on, teenager brain, figure out the sequence, the right order. What we got when we got cable was the movies, you know, the first movies. And watching those was, you know, a great experience as a young person. And it made me go back and watch the original series in order. So, yeah, I mean, even having the action figures as a kid, yeah. I'm not as knowledgeable as many people out there who know, like, what kind of underwear was Spock wearing, all that
stuff. Well, I don't even know if Jim knows that.
Yeah. Are they boxers
but,
or briefs?
Well, yeah. I'm a fan. So yeah, you can imagine when I got this how thrilled and excited it was for me and for my inner child, you know, to be playing a Vulcan.
So when you got the spot, well, before you got the role, when you read for the role, did you know it was going to be a Vulcan or was it just a nondescript role for Star Trek?
I got an audition that said, my agent sent me an audition that said it was for a show named Dylan's Kitchen, okay? And I'm like, man, it must be like a pilot, some new show, because I've never heard of Dylan's Kitchen, right? And it was for a bartender, for the role of a bartender, which you saw in episode 8 as well, played by my good friend Oscar Torre. You know when Raffi and Seven go ask about, they're looking for Jurati and they go to this bar and this guy is sweeping the floor. And that's Oscar.
Yes.
Yeah, remember that? So I originally auditioned for that part for Dylan's Kitchen and I didn't know it was Star Trek. So Joe Menendez, the director for episode 7 and 8, has been a friend for many years. He knows my previous work and he's liked my work for a long time, and I admire his work as well. So after I got the audition for the bartender, which I didn't put myself on tape right away. I waited because I had like 3 days and I had other stuff that I had to turn in first. So the next day after I got the audition for Dylan's Kitchen, Joe sends me a message and on Messenger, and he's like, hey man, you get an audition for Star Trek, I'm directing a couple of episodes. I'm like, no, I didn't get it. What? Oh man, let me talk to casting to make sure. Well, actually, I did get it, but it said Dylan's Kitchen, so I told Joe that I did not, but I actually had received it for the bartender. So the very next day, my agent calls me, and she's like, she tells me, hey, they really want you to audition for that bartender role for Dylan's Kitchen. It's actually Star Trek. And I'm like, I know. The director contacted me, and he told me. And they also want you to audition for this alien, which had no dialogue, and it was just the directions were some movements. It wasn't as specific as what you saw on the show, right? And so I put myself, I'm like, now that I knew that it was Star Trek, I couldn't wait to put myself on tape. So I did that right away for both roles. I'm trying to make this short. Sorry, guys.
You don't have to. We have as much time. We're not in any time limit, so you know, feel free to express yourself anyway and say as much as you want. We're on no time limit at all.
Yeah, Jim gets paid by the hour, so this is good.
Yeah, we get paid by the hour, so you can take your time, and we're not going to cut you off at all.
I'll take my time there. So I put myself on tape. It didn't say what type of alien, what race of alien it was. And I'm trying to do my best with a very small direction that they gave me on paper for the alien. It just spoke about a kid being in the woods, a kid falling on the floor, and then the alien suddenly appearing and chasing him. On that first audition, the kid didn't discover me. Like, I would discover him. He makes a noise, and I go to him, and then I chase him, and then he falls, and then I put my hand on his face. So that was the first clue that in the audition that it could be a Vulcan, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. It didn't say it was a mind meld or anything. So I put myself on tape, sent both auditions to my agent, and then he sends it to the casting director, of course. And then I forget about it, because that's what actors should do. Tape yourself, audition, and forget about it. Because if you have your hopes up and thinking, oh, what's going to happen? Are they going to pick me? It's torture. It's torture 24/7. So I trained myself to forget about auditions. I forgot about it. About a week had passed, and then I get a message from Joe. And the message from Joe, the director, saying, hey, we're looking at your auditions. We like what you did for both roles, and we don't know where to put you because we like you for both of them. One is the bartender who has a dialogue, and he has a dialogue with, you know, two of the main actresses in the show. You have dialogue, but the other one is a Vulcan, and he writes that with capital letters, Vulcan. So it's like, he's like, I'm not letting you pick because I can't let you pick, but if you could pick, which one would you prefer to do, dialogue or no dialogue? And I was like, you know what, dude, I'll play a Vulcan, of course. That would be my choice, you know? And he's like, okay, well, there's a lot of people who are, you know, deciding, you know, it's not up to me. It's a lot of people who make the decision. So yeah, we'll let you know through your agent. A few days later, my agent calls me and she tells me that I got the Vulcan, and I was, you know, super happy, super excited about it. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
That's incredible.
Yeah, what a testimony to your, you know, legit cred as a fan, though, that you would rather take the Vulcan role with no dialogue than the one that did have dialogue. I don't think most actors would make that call, man. That is fabulous.
No, and let me tell you something interesting. Not only did I not pick a part with dialogue, but the bartender is featured in two episodes. So I also took the Vulcan one day of work instead of two, because my friend Oscar ended up, I don't know if you remember, you see him at the end of episode 7, you see him in the back. You see him in the back when Jurati breaks the she breaks the window, right? And you hear the bartender in the background yelling, "Hey, what's going on? Don't do that." Something like that. I can't remember it exactly. So Oscar went and worked for episode 7 for that little part, that little scene, and then for episode 8 with Rafi and with 7 for that dialogue scene. So he actually got 2 days of work, and I only got one, but I don't care because I would pick that Vulcan over many, many other things, you know?
That's
so, yeah.
So cool, man. That's so cool. Well, I think you made the right call because I don't think that there's a whole lot of fans that are looking to see that other character make a return, right? That he was, like, charismatically indelible. But you, my friend, were like, who is this Vulcan, and how can we connect him to what we think is going on in the backstory of the whole franchise? You were charismatic, man. We need to see more of that character, I think. And that's the consensus talking to the crew here. You were awesome.
Yep.
You were fantastic in that role.
And
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Would we rather talk to a Vulcan or a bartender? I mean, I pick Vulcan every time. So,
it's good thing Eric's not here.
Yeah, I think you made the right choice. So one of my other co-hosts, Charles, who's actually too busy working tonight, he couldn't be here, but he did want me to ask you a question. Charles wanted to know, when you landed the role for the Vulcan, what did you do to prepare? Did you go back and watch Spock, or did you watch, you know, Voyager and Tuvok, or did you just put your own spin on the character?
I went and watched Spock first, of course, to the original series, and I went to, I don't know which one of the movies. I can't remember which one of the movies. The one where they go to Earth. Yeah, the one where they go to Earth. I went and watched a lot of Spock, a lot of Spock. And then I think in another podcast I mentioned that I went to see and watch again Sarek. And I did watch Mark Leonard, but I watched mostly the work of James Franks with Discovery. So I went to watch Discovery. I hadn't watched Discovery. Now I'm in season 2 right now. But I did just go to Discovery and jumped throughout just looking for Sarek. So I watch a lot of Sarek and Spock. Yes.
Two excellent choices.
Yes.
Two very excellent choices.
Oh, my
choices.
God. Those guys are on another level. Incredible
so
work. Incredible.
I wanted to ask you a question. When I saw that, first of all, there's two Vulcans on Earth at that time. There's a female Vulcan with you as well. And is there a story about you and her being there, or did they didn't tell you why she was there with you?
This is, of course, on the page, there's almost nothing, okay? So what we got, the information we got was from Joe, from the director, which was, you're just two Vulcans doing some testing on Earth. That's it. And then he tells me the mind meld didn't work because you guys were beamed up back to your ship. And that's it. That's all we got.
Wow.
Why? I don't know if they're keeping something there that they don't want to talk about. I don't know if there's nothing much that they were told as well, that the director was told. But that's all we got. So, of course, as an actor, you have to work with what they give you, and the rest, use your imagination. And that's what I did, you know.
Now, when I saw this for the first time, and the kid was walking through the forest with the flashlight, and he comes up over the hill, and you see all the lights coming through the trees, my mind immediately went to another movie about a kid finding an alien in the forest that I saw as a young child. And of course that was E.T. And I was wondering if that was intentional. Did they try to set that up to remind us of E.T. or was it just a happy accident?
No, it's completely intentional. And the way that I found out about it was I was standing there next to Joe and next to Crescenzo Notarile, who is the DP. And I'm looking at the light, you know, I'm looking at the way they lit up the woods and how beautiful that in person, it looked beautiful. It's amazing the way that these guys put the lights. It was incredible. It set up the mood really, really nice. And so I'm standing next to them. We're about to shoot the first takes. And I tell them, and this just came out right there. I didn't think about it. It's like, I turn to Joe and I say, hey, man, this reminds me of E.T. And they both turn their heads looking at me like in surprise. And they're like, that's what we're going for. How do you know? I'm like,
well, they got it.
They got it.
They definitely
got
it. They nailed it because was the right where I went to was E.T. right away. So listen, we got to take our a quick commercial break, guys, but please don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with Eduardo Roman. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday nights, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And welcome back. We're talking with Eduardo Roman, who played the mind-meld Vulcan in Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 8, Mercy. Eduardo, does this character have a name, or is he just mind-meld Vulcan? I couldn't find a name for him.
Oh, in the end credits, you'll see my credit, and I'm Vulcan number one.
That is tattoo-worthy right there. That is fantastic. That's great.
Yes.
Vulcan number
I'll tell
one.
I'll tell you one thing, and I don't know, and I didn't even want to ask Joe what he meant by it. But when we wrapped, he tells me, he's like, thank you so much. You did an amazing job. Next time, there will be dialogue. And I...
Dun, dun, dun.
I was like, dun, 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 what are you? I was in my head. I was like, I almost went. What do you mean? But I'm like, no, I'm not gonna do that. I'm just gonna say thank you, and that's it. So
wow.
I don't know what that means. You know, I hope it's I don't know.
Inside you're going. That's amazing.
So before
sounds like he
before
knows
I,
something. He's got some insight there. That's great.
They don't do anything for no reason at all on Star Trek. There's a reason for everything they do. I have one more question before I turn it over to Paul or David. First of all, what was it like getting fitted for your Vulcan ears? And did you keep anything as a souvenir from the set, like, in particular, maybe a set of ears?
Okay, how was the fitting? I went before the actual shoot day, which was a night shoot, obviously, in the woods, in those Disney Acres in Santa Clarita, California. That's where we shot that. And before that day, they had me go to Santa Clarita Studios twice. The first day was to try on the ears and take a look at my eyebrows. And so I went there. I went to the trailer with the special effects makeup guys, who are just a bunch of incredible people, very nice and very professional, and they're just amazing. And so they were looking at my ears, and they tried like different sizes until they found the right one that they liked. And then they were discussing whether they were going to cover my real eyebrows completely, or use part of my real eyebrows, cover half of it, and then just add on and put the pointy, the T looking upward section with fake eyebrows, you know. They ended up covering my real eyebrows completely, which took a long time, actually, because I have big eyebrows, dark, thick eyebrows. And so that was the day of prosthetics. The second day, I had to go for a fitting, and again, that department, incredible people, super talented, and they fitted me and they made me try different stuff that they already had, but they ended up making everything from scratch, actually. Well, I'm speaking of my clothes, of course. The only thing they didn't do from scratch were the boots, but all my clothes were made from scratch using my measurements. And, yeah, I did not keep anything. The whole process was very, they were very careful with everything. Of course, I signed an NDA. I couldn't tell anyone that I had worked in an episode of Star Trek until it came out. Until one of the promos featured my face. I was told that I asked them, hey, my face is in one of the promos. Is it okay to share? I'm like, yeah, if your face is in the promo, you can start telling people. So I actually posted that trailer promo on my social media and to let my friends know and, you know, the people who follow me. I did not keep my ears. I did not keep my ears. Let me tell you why, guys. I really want to come back. I really want to come back. So I was being I was being super careful, super respectful. I don't know if they would have given me my ears. Remember, I'm just a day player, a guest star. That's it. I'm not a name actor yet. I guess those guys maybe can get away with that. So I was being very careful because I want to go back. You know, I want to go back. I was trying, you know, to behave and be very professional. And when I found out that they throw them away, they were thrown away. That's what, Chuti's ears as well, the actress who plays my partner, we found out they throw them away. So, but even then I was like, yeah, no, even if I had that information, I would still not have asked for them, just to keep my possibilities open, you know, to go back. So,
wow.
Yeah.
They throw them away. Yeah. Well, it makes me want to go dumpster diving at Paramount. find some Vulcan ears. Wow.
Everyone's like, why does Jim want to go to work for the sanitation department in Los Angeles? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that, Jim?
Oh, boy. Wow. So, we, as fans, though, we all have our own little theories as to who you were and what you actually were doing on Earth. And, my co-host David has a question that he'd like to ask you that you may or may not. Well, someone else may have asked you on another podcast. I'm not sure. But David, you have a question that you wanted to ask.
Yeah. So we all were wondering, in the Carbon Creek episode, there was a Vulcan who got left behind on Earth. And we were wondering if that character, I guess his name was Mo, I'm not really sure what his real Vulcan name was, but we were wondering if you were actually portrayed as that Vulcan who got left behind.
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know, and I don't think so. I'm not sure. I would love it to be, in a way, because then there's some backstory to my Vulcan, then I'm that guy, you know. That would be awesome. And that could probably be used later in some other, in one of the, in another show. But to be honest, I don't know, being honest.
Okay. I actually have one more question for you. So during your whole time filming that part, did you ever get a chance to meet Patrick Stewart or any of the other crew?
Okay. There's a the first one, I did not meet Patrick Stewart because of, obviously he's not in that scene. I almost met him when I went to that day for wardrobe fitting to get my measurements. I remember walking in and the stylist, the main lady, telling me, Patrick Stewart was just here. You just missed him by 15 minutes. And I was like, no. And then I asked her, do you think he would have been, fantasizing of meeting him, you know, do you think he would have been okay, me asking him for a picture or just, you know, shake his hand? And she tells me, this is still in COVID, it was still COVID times with the masks and everyone being super careful. So she told me maybe not shake his hand, maybe a picture, but you wouldn't have been able to like touch him at all, you know, like you could, because they were taking care of him. She told me that they were taking care of him. Like you have no idea, because of course he's a 81 years old person that has to be, you know, very careful with this thing, with this virus. So they were like super careful that the COVID protocols were like at full. And, I almost met him. I did see on set, and I don't know why she was there because we were in the woods, but I did see Alison Pill in the red dress, in her trailer, going into her trailer.
Awesome.
And I'm like, oh, my God. And I got to see that red dress for, you know, way before, you know. And I remember seeing on the call sheet, something like Alison Borg Queen, and I'm like, are they making her a Borg? And I was like, oh my God, I only got to read what was on that episode, you know, and so I remember also telling that day when I saw Alison Pill going into her trailer, and then I went to the. I went to the stylist and asked her, hey, do you think Alison Pill would be fine with me taking a picture with her? And this is going to be a fun fact for you guys. The lady told me, you know what? She's not in a good mood because she just found out she's not going to be in the next season. And I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, man.
So that tells you how we as actors, even at that level, which Alison Pill, you know, she's a name actress, that the writers are still figuring out things. At that point, they were still figuring out who was coming back, who was not, where the story was going. Because I got, even though I'm in episode 7, I heard, I was one of the first, in the first scenes of production, that were being shot, you know, everything's shot in not in order, of course. So she had just found out she was not coming back and she was a little upset, you know, and that's what I was told. Again, this is all things that I'm told while I was there, you know. So yeah.
Wow, that's, geez. So Paul, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask Eduardo. Oh, by the way, guys, our phone number is still the same, 646-668-2433. We don't bite. Eduardo doesn't bite. If you're listening to the sound of my voice and you'd like to join
yourself,
the conversation, if you have a question, please don't hesitate to give us a call, 646-668-2433. Just a simple phone conversation. I'll get you on and you can ask your question. So, Paul, did you have a question for Eduardo?
I might have a couple, absolutely. But I first have to say, Eduardo, it's great having you on here. And people just really need to, I think, remind themselves that you're on for just a few seconds, right, with no dialogue. Yet you created a really indelible attention-getting moments. I mean, that shot where I think you're sort of like half lit by the kid's flashlight and you just kind of lean in there and size him up. It's a great shot. I mean, it really, everybody watching is like, whoa, what's going on? No wonder they use that shot in the promos, because it's just hypnotic. It's really, really great. So, I mean, way to take advantage of a short amount of time is just phenomenal. So, I mean, I think people want to see more of the story, because fans always have, you know, these ideas of they can tell you any Vulcan appearance on Earth like it's they're reading out of the Torah, right? They know it all. So they want to see more, and they're like, how does this all connect? So one of my questions I had for you, Eduardo, was like, when you're there and it sounds like there was minimal direction given to you, either from the page or from the director to work with, as far as like backstory, right? And so if you're working with the actress's Vulcan number two, one of the main things that catches the audience right away is they see you with this machine, right? Did the two of you work out some kind of a backstory for what the machine did that was sort of something to ground off of? How do you treat a big prop like that in terms of what you want to bring your own background to it?
For that we were told we were analyzing elements of in Earth's ground. We were told that that's what we were doing with all that, you know, machinery that we had. Which, by the way, all that stuff, it looked so amazing. And you looked at it if you looked at it close enough, you know, you can see it's just pipes and PVC stuff, but the way the art department created all that machinery and on the screen, it looks like it looks amazing. It looks like metal, you know. It looks like it's incredible how it translates onto the screen. To answer your question, we were told that we were analyzing elements of Earth, of the soil and all that stuff. What for? They didn't tell us. You know, it's just use your imagination, guys. Just you're analyzing, you're taking, you know, how do you call it?
Some kind of experiment.
Specimen.
There's some kind of thing. Some kind of soil samples or something. It's so cool, though.
Yeah.
But it's such a neat thing. It's like we get to be like the kid who sort of stumbles across you in the forest late at night, and it's all creepy, and it's like, what are they doing? And we don't really know. And all of a sudden, he's, you know, wiping out our memory of the whole thing. So it's a really it's a captivating moment. It's really, really cool. And then I wanted
to
ask you one other question, too, Ryan. I thought I heard this rumor that in your hometown history, you had kind of a Khan Noonien Singh connection. Is that true? There was something there with the original man himself. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Well, my family is friends with the Montalban family. Ricardo Montalban, he was born in Mexico City, but as a child, his family moved to my hometown, and he grew up there, his childhood, his teenage years, and all the way to college, he graduated in my hometown. And then after that, I guess the same thing that happened to me happened to him, which is that we went to college, we realized we were actors, and then we left and went to Mexico City. That's exactly what I did. You know, I went to law school in my hometown, and then I finished that and then went to Mexico City to become an actor. And that's what happened to Ricardo Montalban as well. And then he went to the U.S., and here I am, too. So following his footsteps.
That's fantastic, man. What a great role model to have, though. I mean, my goodness, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I mean, he's legendary. Legendary.
He is legend. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And I was looking over your IMDb credits, and there's a short that you did recently on here that really intrigued me, Eduardo, one called Spaceship. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, that one I have up there. That one's my friend's short film, and I have a very, 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 very minimal role.
Okay.
And that was like a favor to a friend.
Got it.
However, okay. it's called Spaceship because the main girl, the little girl, she's like a five-year-old. She dreams of becoming an astronaut. I know it sounds like something, Trek, you know, but related to Star Trek or sci-fi, but it's actually a five-year-old girl who dreams to become an astronaut, an immigrant, undocumented immigrant little girl that dreams to be an astronaut. That's why it's called Spaceship. So she builds this cardboard helmet and instruments made out of cardboard, and she's like imagining and dreaming of being an astronaut, and that's why it's called Spaceship. But again, that one I have a very tiny role in that film. I have other stuff there
If folks are like me and they've just recently discovered you and they're like, this guy's going places without question, we're going to be seeing more of Eduardo, what would you like us to seek out that maybe we haven't seen?
Right now, the movie Coast is out. That just came out about a month ago, first in the theaters, you know, limited release, but we made it to the theaters, which is very rare now for an independent film. They usually just go straight to streaming. So you guys can watch Coast. It's not in the theaters anymore, but it's on Amazon and Apple and YouTube and what else? Vudu.
Sweet.
And that's
excellent.
That's a coming of age story, teenage girl in Guadalupe, California. Coming of age story, and I actually play her mentor, her high school teacher, and I base that role on on Obi-Wan Kenobi, because if you're going to play a mentor, you have to be Obi-Wan.
That's awesome. Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough. That's great, man. That's great. I love hearing that there's this little secret nugget to creating a character like that, that only you know.
Oh,
and
yeah,
now we
yeah.
all know.
I take from everyone. That character, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi combined with what's his name? Mr. Keating, Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society.
Oh, right.
And a couple of my real life teachers. So that's how he built that character. Using
that's
all
great,
those,
man. That is fantastic.
Wow.
Well, I just want to, again, thank you for spending some time with us on the show. And I don't need to wish you luck with your career, because clearly you've got it. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of you in things down the road. And I'm super excited that you're part of this incredible franchise history. Not even if they let you keep the ears. You'll get the ears next time, along with the dialogue.
I'll ask for them next time. I'll make sure to ask
for
them.
You did a tremendous job and definitely created some exciting moments in this season. So really, really want to wish you the best. And thanks so much. It's really, really a great moment. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It means a lot. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. We're going to take our last commercial break of the evening. So don't touch that dial. When we come back, we're going to finish up with Eduardo Roman. Again, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you're listening to the sound of my voice right now, pick up the phone and call, and you can ask a question. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Trek Talking, All Things Star Trek and Beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking to Eduardo Roman, who played Vulcan number one, a.k.a. the mind-meld Vulcan, which is what I'm calling him, from Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode Mercy. And he'll be with us about for another 10 or 12 minutes. So if you guys have a question, please give us a call at 646-668-2433. We are still live. So, Eduardo, I had a question. I found you, actually, from the post that you put out on social media of you as a Vulcan. And when I saw that, I immediately messaged you and said, hey, you want to come on our podcast and talk about that? That's how I found you. So if you didn't put that out there, I wouldn't have seen it and I wouldn't have reached out to you. So that was pretty cool. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for being so available to us fans, because very rarely do we get to talk to someone who actually got to live the dream like you did. So thank you so much for that. I wanted to ask you, I saw a picture. I don't know if it was on your IMDb page or if it was on your social media page, but I saw a picture of you with Doug Jones, who plays Saru on Star Trek Discovery. But you weren't on Discovery, though. You were on Picard. So did you meet him at a convention, or how did you meet Doug Jones?
Well, going back to short films, I've done a ton of short films, and I've done from like really small parts, like in that spaceship film that we just talked about a few minutes ago, to being the lead in short films. I love short films. I think it's a very pure way of cinematic expression without having like a studio telling you what to do, how to do it, the type of audience that you need to please, the amount of tickets that the movie needs to sell. I think short film is still the pure, because you don't have to make all these suits happy about making so much money, right? So I'm still doing short films. I love them. And there's this channel called Shorts TV, which I know DirecTV has it, but in other countries, it's other providers. So Shorts TV, it's a channel dedicated only to shorts. And it's 24/7, 365 days, a year of just shorts, no commercials. It's nonstop. And there's a few short films that I participated in that are on rotation, especially one called Contrapelo, which actually was shortlisted for the Oscars in 2015. Very successful short. A lot of people like it. You'll find it on my IMDb. It's Contrapelo. It's on Apple. It's really good. Not because I'm in it. I swear the director, he's a genius. He actually just wrote the script for Blue Beetle. The director of Contrapelo is the writer of Blue Beetle, the new DC Comics movie that's coming out next year. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So what happened is that Shorts TV noticed that I'm in this many short films that they have constantly on rotation, and they decided to give me their Visionary Award, which is an award they give every year people who have contributed to short films, not only actors, but of course, directors, producers, writers, screenwriters. So they were very cool and nice to give me. In 2017, they gave me the Visionary Award. And what happened is the next year, the recipient was Doug Jones. And they asked me to give him the award, being the previous recipient. So they had, at the ceremony, they asked me to give him the award, present the award to Doug Jones. And I was like, oh, my God, he's one of my heroes, you know. All the Guillermo del Toro movies and all the stuff he's done. And now, well, then he was shooting. No, Discovery hadn't started, right?
2007. When it aired.
2018. Oh, okay. There you go. And so, that's how I met him and gave him his award. And he's the nicest person. You have no idea. He's so nice. He stayed after the ceremony. He took pictures with everyone. Everyone. When I say everyone, it's everyone. He is the coolest and nicest person that I've ever met, besides having that tremendous talent. So that's the story on that picture.
Wow, that's impressive. And just one more thing before we're running out of time here. The lady's telling me in my ear that we're almost out of time. Are you working on anything currently? What are you currently working on that people can find you in? Or if they want to look you up and see what you're up to, what are you working on right now? Anything current?
I decided to go to my first love, and I'm in a play. I'm in rehearsals for a play, and we are going to open on if any of you guys or anyone listening is in LA, we're opening on May. The previews start on May 19th, which is less than a couple of weeks, and the actual opening is on May 27th at the LATC in downtown downtown LA at the Tom Bradley Theater, and that's what I'm doing right now. The name of the place is called Sleep with the Angels, and everyone's invited to come and see it. Come and see us.
Yeah, if I didn't live all the way up here in Vermont, you know, that would be cool. I'm way up in the sticks.
my day job is voiceover. I do for the Hispanic market in Spanish. I do a lot of voiceover for many different brands, like Toyota, Skechers, Philips 76. So if you turn on the Spanish language radio, you will hear me for sure.
So I just want to ask you one more quick thing before we have to go here. Way back in the 90s, when I used to run Star Trek conventions myself, Mark Leonard, who of course played Mr. Spock's father, Sarek, was a guest star at one of my very first Star Trek convention that I ran. And my wife and I went and picked him up at the airport and brought him back to the hotel, and we were talking to him. And one of the number one rules is you never talk to the actors about Star Trek, because it's just, you know, you want to be professional. So we avoided it, and we get back to the hotel, and he says, you seem like you're nervous and tense. I said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he reached across the table and Vulcan mind melded me from Mark Leonard, from Spock's father. And it was the coolest thing that ever, ever happened to me. I was like, oh my God, Mark, wow, mind blown. And it was so cool. When you did your mind meld scene in Mercy, how did you practice your technique? Or did you just kind of go for it in the spur of the moment?
No, I did practice it. And what threw me off, I'm going to tell you, be honest with you, you know, because this is, I'm one of you guys, you know.
Yep.
So I'm being like honest. Let me tell you something. The reason I posted, I announced myself on the groups, it's because I still feel like I'm a fan. You know, yes, I'm an actor. This is what I do for a living. But I am a fan. So what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to be honest with you. I practice the hand position. I practice on my wife, who is, of course, an adult. when I got on, yep. When I went to set and I did it for the first time and realized that it was a little, I mean, I knew it was a little kid. It's on the page, right? But I forgotten that it was going to be a small little face. And I was like, I was thrown off because then I had to adjust my hands to,
yep.
to the small structure of his face, you know? And that, I mean, honestly, it got me a little nervous. Like, oh my God, what am I? Okay, let me adjust. I mean, I need some time. I need to adjust my huge hands to the little kid's face. Give me some time, please. So I actually practiced on Jackson. Like, Jackson, I'm going to touch you. I'm sorry, man. But I need to do this to find out where I'm going to put my fingers on your face. And and then I got it. And then, of course, what you saw on the screen, the end result, I think it came out really well.
It definitely
was that
did.
One take?
Oh, no. No, no, no. They had me. I don't know if you can notice, but the first time when Wells is telling his version, you know, my hand goes on Jackson's face, on young Wells's face, really quick. I place my hand on his face really quick. The second time when Patrick Stewart is explaining that he was mind melding, if you notice, my hand is going slower towards young Wells's face. Mm. That was a different take, of course. And that was, I was actually standing kind of behind the lens. So the first time the lens was behind me, the second time I was next, more or less next or behind the lens, and just stretching my hand because that's how Joe wanted the take. And, oh, my God, it's beautiful because it's like a slow motion of my hand. It wasn't slow motion. It was me doing it slowly, my hand approaching Jackson's face from a slightly different angle than the first time. And because it's like different ways of telling it. Like this is how Wells interpreted it, like a little more aggressive. And then the second time it was a little more subtle, you know, like a Vulcan would do, you know, trying not to scare the kid. So mm-hmm. all that we talked all about that. Of course, it was supposed to play like a horror. We spoke about it, feeling a little bit like a horror scene, you know, because the kid was supposed to be he was traumatized by the event. So we had to play it out like something horrific happening to him. When it actually was, at the end of the day, it wasn't. You know, they were trying to help him so he wouldn't grow up with that trauma. So, yeah. So, yeah. I don't know if I answered your question. I went, to different things. Sorry.
Okay.
Eduardo, one more thing. What did it feel like to get beamed? I mean, we see people getting transported all the time, but you got to wear the ears. You got to be a Vulcan. You got to do a mind meld. And last but not least, you got to get beamed off the planet. So what was that like to be transported?
Let me tell you something. When Joe asked me which one would you like to play, the bartender or the Vulcan, I mean, besides it being, it was not only a Vulcan. Besides playing a Vulcan, two very important things were happening. I was doing a mind meld and I was getting beamed up. So I was like, there's no way that I'm doing the bartender. I have to do all these important things. All these iconic things are happening. I, you know, getting beamed up. Come on, man. That's one of the most amazing things in Star Trek. So when I saw myself getting beamed up, was amazing. When we were there, it was just like, hey, freeze. Okay, now walk away. That was it, you know?
But it looks so good on the film.
When they edit, they do their magic, you know.
And you actually got beamed. That was so cool. Well, Eduardo, Go ahead, David.
I was just going to ask. Did they say exactly why you had to get beamed off the planet, or is this something that they didn't put in the script?
They didn't put it in the script. And I swear, they probably would tell me not to tell you guys. But I swear that I wasn't told why. I wasn't told. I don't know. They left that open. I don't know why.
Okay.
Well, that just means there's a Vulcan ship out there, and you're on it, and you can come back at any time. Right? you can come back any time.
Yeah.
Well, Eduardo, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your play rehearsal to hang out and Trek talk with us and share your stories and your experiences on the set of Star Trek Picard. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much, and good luck with your play.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I had a great time talking to you guys.
It's pretty easy and pretty painless, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Like getting beamed up.
It's easier than getting beamed up.
Yes, this podcast is being interrupted by a beam up.
It's a beam up, yep. And I also want to say thank you so much to Paul for joining us tonight and Trek talking with us. And, of course, David, thank you so much for hanging out and Trek talking with us. David,
yeah.
Thank you.
Nice.
And I
want to
let you guys know. Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? And I want to let you guys know that on Thursday night on our regular schedule, same bat time, same bat channel, we're going to be talking about the Star Trek Picard Season 2 finale, Farewell. But wait, there's more. We're also going to be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds premiere. So Thursday is going to be a busy, busy show, which is why we had Eduardo here with us today, because we have so much to talk about on Thursday. And you guys can check us out on our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond. You have to spell that out, A-N-D. And you can go right there and you can find out what we're doing, what we're up to, when our next show is. And you can find a link to this podcast so that you can listen to this podcast anytime you want at any later date. So keep that in mind. And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe that. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.